Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Inside the FLX podcast presented by FL1 News. I'm Josh Durso, and while hosting responsibilities are typically mine, I handed the reins off to the very capable Gabriel Petrazio. He's an intern with us this semester. He caught up with Ontario County Sheriff Kevin Henderson, who provided an update on his recently started term as sheriff and some state proposals which could have an impact on how folks do business here in the region, especially those in the law enforcement community. You don't want to miss this conversation, but before we get to it, I'd like to remind everyone that the podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. We have been overwhelmed with the number of folks listening on podcasting platforms, and we are grateful for your continued support. If you're watching on YouTube, though, consider subscribing to the channel. There's a lot of great content being pumped out by FingerLakes1.com throughout the calendar year. Without further ado, though, enjoy our conversation with Sheriff Kevin Henderson.
My first question for you is, now that you've been in office for virtually a month or more, rather, how does it feel to have that transition? And what does it mean for you to be the next sheriff of Ontario County?
Well, thanks. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak with you. Well, we're going on about 52 days since I've taken over. The transition when I was elected, while Sheriff Pavro, retired Sheriff Pavro, was still with us, he really took the time. He and I worked together very well. I worked with him for my whole career. So the transition really went smoothly. Since I have now been sheriff since January 1, what I have done is made some promotions regarding my administration. We had a few retirements, which allowed me to make some promotions. So that is done. I have a new chief corrections officer, a new administrative lieutenant in the jail division. I will be promoting a sergeant from the corrections, as well as a new road sergeant. So it's going extremely well. I think the direction we're going in already has been well received.
Well, that's great to hear. And my first series of questions revolves around the new mugshot law incident that's taking place right now with Governor Andrew Cuomo. And I'm curious to hear about if you have any position or thoughts on what does this mean for you in a law enforcement capacity?
Well, again, you look at a couple of components. Freedom of the press, obviously, is a big concern because when we do make an arrest, concurrently until the law is actually, if it does pass and is proposed, passes and enacted, currently we will release a mugshot of somebody that has been charged with a crime. Again, we haven't seen the actual law yet from the governor or any of his representatives, but myself and speaking for the majority, if not all of the sheriffs, feel that this will be an issue that we do not support. We feel that if somebody is charged, we should be able to afford the media or those that are wishing that information the opportunity to have that. So my stance as sheriff in Ontario County, I don't agree with the law. But again, I really haven't seen the actual law. So right now what we're hearing, I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm. And so if this law were to be enacted, if it was voted in, of course, by the state legislator and such, how would that impact your way to, maintain public safety and to engage with how your office would function in the future?
Well, exactly. Again, once we do see the law, if we're prohibited from releasing any information, I am concerned about that, especially if we're looking for somebody that may be a known person, maybe a warrant, that we have outstanding warrants that have committed crimes that we need to seek and take into custody. That will probably actually have a very big influence on us. Again, public safety, if we have somebody that we have charged and feel that should be known to the community, this will probably also hinder our opportunity to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are concerned about it as a public safety component as well.
Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, like engaging with communities and understanding how to find or take note of suspects in incidents where crimes are taking place, do you think that would decrease overall if mugshots were not to be released?
It very well could. A lot of times we reach out to the media, we'll have surveillance video from maybe a store or a device. Somebody might have taken a photo on a device. Again, we're interested to see how will that play as well, because we do release those photos to the media, and in the majority of the time are quite successful. We're trying to identify somebody that has just committed a crime or a mm-hmm. suspect of a crime. So again, with the law, if that is also part of this issue, but part of this proposed legislation, this will be a big issue for us. It's going to have a direct impact on us.
And do you think, in a greater concept, do you think that public information should be obviously available? And what does that mean if we were to have this law enacted? How does that influence or change public information and the accessibility to that?
Well, yeah, again, I think obviously the reason we do what we do now is under the current law, we are able to release this information. And sometimes when we do release a mugshot, so-and-so just charged with this crime, there might be other victims that were reluctant to come forward, but now knowing that we have this person in custody, might come forward and say, hey, I was a victim as well. Mm-hmm. Or this person did this to me that you have in custody now. I saw the mugshot in the paper or on the TV or on the radio program, Finger Lakes One. Mm. And so that is also a concern to us, that we might not be able to solve other crimes if this is what is enacted.
Mm. And so another related topic that you also talked about, so you appointed, or you have recently appointed, a new corrections officer, is that correct?
Chief Corrections Officer. Yeah,
okay.
In charge of the corrections
division. So I was curious as to if you can elaborate on kind of the current status of like what the chief corrections officer will, what is his responsibilities, and what is the oversight on that in general?
Oh, absolutely. So within the structure of the sheriff's office, obviously the sheriff, which is me, I appoint my undersheriff, who is number two in command. My office has a chief deputy who oversees the entire sheriff's office as well as a command rank. And then my divisions, I have a road patrol division and I have a corrections division. And within that corrections division, I have a chief corrections officer. Chief Corrections Officer Smith, oversees the corrections operations on a day-to-day basis. He makes sure that we are within standards of the Commission of Corrections, which is through New York State. We are obligated under the law to follow the Commission of Corrections regulations that they set. He makes sure that we are doing that, that we're in compliance. And then he also works with the lower administration, which would be a lieutenant. We have two lieutenants in our division for corrections, mm-hmm. and then the sergeants. On a day-to-day, he works more with me as the sheriff to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the commission and the day-to-day operations.
And so how many correctional facilities are located, I guess, in Ontario County specifically that he would oversee?
So we have one. Our main jail, our main corrections division, is out in the town of Hopewell. We call it the county complex. Currently, we're housing right around 135 to 140 inmates. We can house up to 291 inmates. The facility was built in 2003, so it's mm-hmm. relatively new. It's not old like some of the other facilities have.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you've heard of recently the new bill that is circulating in New York State, and it's called the Prison Minimum Wage Act. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I did. I just heard that proposal by the mm-hmm. governor and by the legislator.
And do you have any thoughts on that comment related to...
Well, that in itself is driven more at the state level. We don't have programs at our facility that we pay inmates for.
Mm-hmm.
A county jail versus a state prison. County jail, if somebody is sentenced to a charge, a misdemeanor charge, which is a year or less jail time, under the law, the county has to board that inmate. If somebody is charged with a felony level crime mm-hmm. and convicted and sentenced on a felony level, mm-hmm. that inmate is then under the care and custody of the New York State prison system.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that legislation is geared towards the prison system at mm-hmm. the state level, and we don't pay our county inmates.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in a greater question that would be, do you think that as a law enforcement person, do you think that inmates should get increased wages? You see some of these people who you work with or engage with on the streets. Do you think that that is a noble proposition, I guess, or do you think that it's a drain more so on taxpayer dollars?
Well, yeah, if you ask for personal opinion, my opinion, if somebody's incarcerated, I mean, myself as sheriff and at the county level, we offer our inmates many opportunities. We have programs and we have parenting programs. We have folks that come in and help inmates prepare for interviewing for a job, filling out an application, passing a GED if they don't have a GED or high school diploma. We have close to 30 different programs in our facility. Do I feel at a personal level that we should increase wages and put the burden on the taxpayer? I don't think so. My opinion is if they're incarcerated, we'll provide the necessary housing. Obviously, feed them, house them, give them opportunities if they choose to want to get out of their cell and go in and work in the environment at the state level. I know they have many different things they do. Mm-hmm. The joke is they make our license plates. Well, they do. There's a division within the Office of the Corrections Division of State. They do make the license plates. They make furniture. Should they be paid for it? Well, a small amount would probably be acceptable for them to make some money to put in their commissary in order to buy other items that they work for. Do I agree that they should have a fairly large increase in salary or a pay and put the burden on the taxpayer? No.
No, thank you for those comments. It's very interesting to hear about that from a law enforcement perspective about that issue and what is taking place and just some of the newer laws that are on the books. I'm also curious to hear your position on the Real ID policy and if you're aware with that and what your office is doing currently with the concern with undocumented migrants with the Real ID policy, giving them licenses and such.
Yeah, again, a lot of these policies at the federal level that are imposed on us at a local level, there's still a lot of unknowns, even with the Real ID policy. It's a proposed legislation that they're going to enact for all those, obviously, in our country, documented or undocumented, to have the Real ID. But again, right now, there's so little information about it, it's real difficult to even comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just out there that is being talked about.
And so has your office, have you taken any steps yet for, because I know that they do issue it in some states, in New York State, I believe that you can actually acquire a Real ID. Has your office, trained in any capacity to identify the differences between various IDs that you can get issued through the Real ID program?
Well, we have had no formal training yet. We have been in contact with the Department of Motor Vehicles, who mm-hmm. really drives the IDs because most of them are issued through the DMV. And we do work with their investigators. They're actually investigators that are assigned to the Department of Motor Vehicles. And as this information comes out, we will work with them. We do partner with them, mm-hmm. Especially at venues if we do look for false IDs. And if we do come across somebody that has a false ID, then we'll work with the investigative division of the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Okay. And with you, with pulling over, making routine, traffic stops and such, how does that change, the way that you engage with, drivers and such and people that you may pull over on the side of a road with the Real ID policy, with the Real ID program, specifically if someone has that ID? Present on their person.
Well, obviously, if they have that, and it's not a false ID. It's not an ID that has been made without being issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles. Our policy is if it's a traffic infraction, they're treated like everybody else. Mm-hmm. We don't take them into custody, and we won't call immigration or control if they're there. I mean, if we stop them, our policy is not to detain these unless there's a legal document that says that they are to be detained for some type of a crime.
Mm-hmm. And as you're well aware, you know, upstate New York specifically has a high, you know, undocumented migrant population. I believe is the third largest in the nation behind California and Texas. And so, how does this policy and the program in general affect your work in general? Do you think like this is a good policy for undocumented migrants to have some form of identification if they were to be pulled over? Does this make your job a little easier?
I think it does, and it will. Again, you're right. If you look at their surrounding area, Ontario County, Wayne County, Seneca County, we are in the area very dependent on migrant workers. The apple farms, we have large dairy farms in all three of these mm-hmm. counties. So if for us as a law enforcement, they have this program and have real IDs, yeah, our biggest challenge is sometimes is twofold. We have a language barrier. We do have bilingual deputies that we have, which is a benefit. We do have services available to us if our deputies aren't on duty. We do have a relationship with those that could come in and help us with that, asking the questions back and forth if we're having a challenge with language. Mm-hmm. And not only on top of that is sometimes if we're involved in a case, I had a fatality a few years ago, and it was an undocumented person from Mexico. We had a very difficult challenge for identification of that person. Mm-hmm. It took us several weeks before we made an identification, so we could then work with. Actually, we worked with a Mexican consulate
wow.
to get that deceased back to their family for proper burial disposition.
Wow.
That was one of the challenges, and folks don't realize that sometimes these are challenging to us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't make a positive ID, then they're listed as a unknown or a Jane Doe or John Doe. And we take the appropriate steps.
And so you think that if that person was in possession of like a real ID that can, you know, associate a name to that body, to that face, do you think that would have changed the outcome, obviously, with the consulate and such?
It would have. Again, we at the end, it seemed to all come together, but it did take quite a few extra steps. But yeah, if that person had a real ID and we were able to verify and take the next step to finish that identification. Yeah, I truly mm-hmm. believe that would have probably made that outcome a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end run, it did go smooth, but it mm-hmm. was a little challenging at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. A question that I have, and something that was recently in the news about a month ago or so, as a former resource officer, do you have any comments, I guess, or thoughts on the incident that took place in the Binghamton school regarding the nurse who allegedly conducted a strip search? Do you have any idea about potential reinforcing of school policies in Ontario County region or any new procedures that may arise in response to that incident that took place?
Yeah, I've been following that as much as I can through the media, and again, you know, these are allegations at this point. I know it's being investigated. I guess on that, it's difficult, until that investigation is completed.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're allegations. They're theoretically hearsay that this happened. If it's found that did occur, what would I do at our office with my SROs? We have seven in our office. Make sure that they understand the policy. Again, my deputies that work in the schools work for me. They're under my authority. They work in partnership with the schools. Like when I was a school resource officer, we had two issues, two things to focus on. First and foremost, I'm a deputy sheriff. I'm in there to enforce laws. I'm also there to be a role model and to work with students and staff that wanted or just day-to-day interaction. But we also need to make sure that the school has policies and the staff follow the school policies. So in regards to that, this will be an interesting case with the outcome of the investigation. Mm. If it's proven to be true, then yeah, I think modifications need to be made. Mm-hmm. In relation to strip search, we don't even strip search in a jail environment. We mm-hmm. do pat downs. We do if there is a level of concern, but it's very strict in adherence to guidelines for what we do. Mm-hmm. So this will be an interesting case. And mm-hmm. again, right now it's only allegations.
Yeah. And do you think that it's more so of like an institutional change, or do you think that that would be coming from like an individual, like a, you know, an incompetent nurse in this instance who was allegedly conducting the strip search? Like, I would assume that Binghamton schools do not allow for that. I could be wrong. I'm actually not knowledgeable on that, but if it wasn't a policy or something that the school would allow for, obviously, then do you think it's just like an incident, that isolated incident in that regard?
Well, and a good, again, Gabriel, for me to comment on that case, it would be unfair on either party. So on that, I'm really going to have, because again, I don't know mm-hmm. much about it. It's, and for me to comment as the sheriff in my capacity in my county, mm-hmm. I really, either way, I don't want to take a stance until the outcome of the investigation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was wondering if you could also elaborate on any updates pertaining to like the Victor and Farmington corridors, if there's anything new with the road patrols and any new movements that are taking place there. I know that there's a lot of traffic going on, and allegedly there was going to be some expansion to the force. I was wondering if that was going to be taking place still.
Well, there won't be an expansion in per se additional staff. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure, and we do this now, and to answer that question first, and then I'll make what I'm going to impose as I go forward, is we've entered into a contract with the town of Victor, the town of Farmington, and the town of Canandaigua as well. They're really all part of that corridor. They actually have used some of their town money and have entered into a contract with us, with myself at the sheriff's office and the county, to provide for additional traffic enforcement. So we have three deputies part-time because of the funding sources, but part-time that they work, each of them work 20 hours a week, and they focus on areas of concern regarding excessive speed, aggressive or reckless drivers. Mm-hmm. And then we do targeted areas of enforcement, especially in our developments in that Victor, Farmington, Canandaigua area. So yes, we've taken the steps. The most recent contract was County Canandaigua that I signed in January. Mm-hmm. And a deputy, actually two part-time deputies, split their hours, and they work in a specific area. So we are addressing that part of it with mm-hmm. these additional part-time staff. I'm also going to have a traffic enforcement interdiction team that when I have the availability of manpower, they will be trained to go out, not only enforce traffic and aggressive drivers, but we're also going to go out and look for impaired drivers. And those folks that, if they choose to try to bring drugs in my county, they will be trained, and if they're stopped and able to do through the interdiction stop, prove that they have narcotics, will be charged and brought before the district attorney and the courts for prosecution. Mm. Fortunately, drugs are traveling in these vehicles every day. Mm. And we're being, as myself as sheriff, even I stated in my campaign last year, I'm going to be very aggressive in narcotics enforcement. Mm. And we've been doing that. We've made some arrests. We'll be making announcements soon. And once we finalize, and I think people will be impressed for the level of focus that I've done so far. Mm.
And do you know as to when, is there an estimated time as to when this task force would be created?
Well, it's driven by staffing. We have a police academy that just started at the beginning of February 4th, actually. Mm. So I have seven deputies that I hired, and other counties, I know Seneca County, Wayne County, Livingston County, Cayuga County. We all have officers in the academy as well as some of the local PDs. Mm-hmm. So once I have the manpower and the training completed, we're going to get started. Hopefully sooner than later, put it that way.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear. I was wondering if you can give us an update also on the current drug offenses and arrests that are taking place in the area. I've seen a lot of press releases mm-hmm. that have been coming out, a lot of joint investigations that are being conducted and such. And I was wondering if, from your perspective as sheriff, you can elaborate sure. on any of those.
Yeah, as you could tell, as we make these arrests, those that we make arrest and we'll make a media announcement that we've done this. Others we haven't because we're looking at further investigations. So what we have done is we have teamed together. We can't do this by ourselves, meaning the Ontario County Sheriff's Office. So we have officers from the city of Canandaigua and the city of Geneva that work on what we call a special investigative unit or a narcotics unit. And they go out and through different means of investigation, go and seek these drugs that people are trying to bring in our communities mm-hmm. and put their cases together. And then make an arrest. So yes, we are very focused. We have several investigators from my office as well as the other police departments, and they're very good at what they do. And I'm very happy right now with their performance on getting some of these drugs off our streets.
Do you think that there's definitely progress since you've taken office as sheriff of Ontario County in relation to the drug offenses and also the opiate issue in general?
Well, I don't want to take all the credit. I think Sheriff Phil Pavro did a great job as well. Again, like I said earlier, he left me in a good spot for the transition. Mm-hmm. But when I was elected, I got my unit together and I said, this is one of my primary focuses. They understand that. They're very good at communicating with me and telling me where they're looking at and what cases they're developing. And I think they understand that, as I said many times, and even during my speech for my swearing-in ceremony, I have their back, and mm-hmm. I'm very supportive. And anything they need to get this job done, to get these drugs off our street, I'm going to support, because I'll be out there with them too. I'll be working with them, and again, I hear from our community that that when we do make these arrests, that they're happy. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what we want to do, is we want to make sure we continue that focus.
And so aside from cracking down on actual people who are possessing or potentially selling drugs and narcotics and such, are there any other policies or any plans that you have following just, arresting and convicting and such?
Yes. So part of what I'm working on now, I'm developing what we call a therapeutic pod policy, where what we'd like to do is, like Sheriff Baxter just did in Monroe County, a lot of these folks, if you're a drug dealer and you're only dealing for the opportunity of profit, you do that, you get caught. My position is you get prosecuted and you accept the sentence that should be put towards you. If you're struggling with addiction and are seeking drugs, and the way to do that is if you're going out and committing crimes, because they can't beat this addiction, which is a disease, I want to make sure at the jail environment that if those that are incarcerated in our facilities have the opportunity in this therapeutic pod, which would be a program, what would be a medical intervention team concept, where we give them direct opportunity to go through rehab, deal with their addiction, deal with that disease, and make sure that when they get discharged from our facility, that they're not going right back on the streets to seek to feed their need for the drug, that they're able to, if they feel that they're going to relapse, have those connections and make sure that they have some, mm-hmm. hopefully some sort of opportunity to make sure that it's not going to happen. That's our big goal. Mm-hmm. I don't say, hey, if they're using drugs, big deal, they belong in jail. No, these folks have families, they have stories. You look at a lot of them and speak to a lot of folks. They're not there because they one day woke up and said, I'm going to go out and start using drugs. They woke up because they had, a lot of them, the stories are they had an injury, were prescribed an opioid, through which is a legal narcotic, and then become addicted because, unfortunately, we all thought, we listened to these companies, they're non-addictive medications. That's been proven to be false. And it'll be interesting to see how these states approach the big pharma lawsuits that will be coming up, and to hold these companies accountable for the actions that they've done.
No, that's very true. I can only imagine how they're going to hold Big Pharma accountable for, you know, highly addictive opiates that were used originally for cancer induced patients. And it's definitely going to be a big issue, and it's definitely affecting our communities, and we appreciate what you do on your end. One last question for you before we wrap it up. The Soldiers and Sailors Medical Hospital in Peng Yan just recently closed and now will no longer accept new patients. How do you think that affects treatment and potential ambulance services and such for opiate overdoses in the area and users and such?
Well, again, with that facility closing, that's going to be, if you look at it in our geographical area, Seneca County does not have a hospital in their county. Most of the patients that are needed medical services come to Geneva General, which is in the Ontario County, city of Geneva, or they go over to Cayuga County, dependent where they are. With Soldiers and Sailors closing, that will be a direct influence and probably a mechanism for us to make sure that we have the necessary facilities, the beds, and the monetary funding to deal with this. So we'll have to partner with our surrounding counties. I know, because I have the relationship with these counties, that they're just not going to wipe their hands and walk away. They're going to say, how can we help you? We know this is going to be a burden upon your county. How can we help you? And work together. My relationship, obviously, with Sheriff Spike, Sheriff Luce, Sheriff Virts, Sheriff Baxter, and even Sheriff Doherty from Livingston County. We all are very vocal. We support our communities because we're proud to be the sheriffs in each of our communities and to make sure we do the best. So I'm sure we'll work with them.
Well, that's great. Well, Sheriff, thank you for your time. Truly appreciate it being on our show today.
Again, thank you for the opportunity, and I appreciate the time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. That's all the time we have for today. A special thanks to Sheriff Henderson for stopping by and making time. And of course, our loyal listeners who make this program possible. We will be back next week with another episode of the show. And until then, stay tuned to FingerLakes1.com for the latest news, weather, sports, and headlines from around the region. Be well.